Can you feel it in the air? The subtle change in temperature? The sunset happens earlier and earlier each evening. A hint of fog here and there. Spiders have started making their webs, perfectly placed, so that your fucking head ends up right in the middle of it. A man with five dicks has begun to roam the neighborhood.
What?
That's right, dear listener. We are inching closer to October, the season of men with five dicks haunting your days. What? I don't know.
They're just daytime haunting.
Yeah, daytime hunting. Okay, yeah. Anyways, this is Dick Hunt. I mean, Gem Hunt.
What?
Our family horror podcast where we, your stinky hosts, select a movie with less than 5,000 votes on the internet movie dick bucket. We watch it. We talk about it. We vote on whether it is a whore gem or a fat turd. The fattest turd you might have ever seen, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Cody, and I really like being asleep, so I guess that makes me anti-woke.
I'm Beth, and I am the filthiest person in the world.
I'm Buggy, and I'm gonna bust your balls.
Nice. That's a good one. You're the only one that had a movie reference in your introduction.
I'm trying.
Life references.
It was either Tom Hanks, something related to him.
Yeah. I decided to, for the first time in a while, deviate from using a movie reference as my introduction.
I never do.
Subvert expectations, if you will.
Exactly. Okay, what's going on tonight? What's happening? We had a little oopsie whoopsie on the last episode. I was talking about our new website, and I totally said the wrong website. So if you're listening to episode 31, don't go to that website. Could be a butthole gym digging website. I don't know what it is.
Oh, right.
Our actual website is www.gemhuntpod.com, not podcast. Just pod.com. And I did the thing I said I was going to do. I started a Blue Sky account.
Woo!
I don't understand how to use it. I don't know what to do. But we're at Gem Hunt at Blue Sky, so join that. I hear that's where all the radical leftists are going now that the other social media applications are owned by oligarchs and fascists, which I'm cool with. I'm on the winning team. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
You know, when I'm watching soccer, I just pick the team that wins the most games. We have stickers in process.
Yeah, stickers coming.
We have a company about four blocks up the road that are making stickers for us. We're going to start putting stickers up around town, and that's going to be fun. If you want a sticker, get a hold of us somehow. Maybe we'll give you a couple to put up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you get a hold of us, we could probably, yeah.
Come find us.
Don't come find us, and we're not going to say the name of the sticker company, and then you'll know a four-block radius of where we live.
Oh, that's
come
true.
Find
yeah.
us.
If we're going to start being radical online, we can't let anybody know where we are, otherwise they're going to come and
start
drag us out.
Arrest us.
I don't know. We're not that radical.
No. Well, we are that radical. We're not that online.
Well, we're not in the field, really, either.
I'm kind of datical.
Like, currently.
In the field?
You know, like, we're not, like,
working in the fields.
We're not We're not in the fields fighting in this current moment.
Yeah. I'm
is
ready.
What I mean, like, I don't know. I lost it.
Yeah.
I lost it. I was going to, like,
folks.
Try.
That's another oopsie whoopsie.
Yeah, I was oopsie trying whoopsie. To, like, make a comment, and it just didn't work at the end.
That's okay.
Got that.
We did go to a thing recently. We went to Hiroko the Goblin at the Hollywood Theater, which was very fun. If you don't know anything about this movie, it was directed by Shinya Tsukamoto, who also directed Tetsuo the Iron Man. So you kind of, just from that, you know that it's going to be wild. Part of the Movie Madness creature feature programming that they're doing at the Hollywood. They're related, if you didn't know that, but it was a fun thing. It was a sold-out show. What did you think of that?
It was so fun. It was human heads on spider bodies.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was just, like, straight fucking fun.
I don't know why. I feel like that has been on my watch list for a long time, and I don't know why it took me so long. I'm glad that there was a screening of it, because for some reason, I was just putting off watching that movie. But yeah, it's so hella fun.
It was free too, right?
It was free. Yeah. It's a free member screening. We are members.
Flex.
Yeah. We didn't display our members at the member screening. But so yeah, check out
theme.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Hayako the Goblin, check it out. Definitely worth a watch. Fun movie. Ridiculous. Silly. Has some scary moments. Has some funny moments. I don't know. It's just a good, it's a all around good time, I think. But with all that said, we have a movie to discuss this evening that was selected by Beth. I think we might have hinted at it last week.
I announced it for once in my life. True. I knew ahead of time.
You told the people.
What is the film that we will be reviewing this evening?
It's called He Knows You're Alone from 1980.
Hell yeah. This is a slasher film. We're going back to the slasher bucket. It's been a while since we've done a slasher, right? That's always fun. I like reviewing slashers. They're a little different.
Mm-hmm.
This was directed by Armand Mastroianni, written by Scott Parker, starring Caitlin O'Haney as Amy, Dan Scardino as Marvin. I like the name Dan Scardino. That's a cool name. Yeah, it's
very New York.
Yeah, very good name. Elizabeth Kemp as Nancy, Lewis Arlt as Detective Len Gamble. We got good old James Rebhorn as Professor Carl Mason. We had a little bit of discussion about James Rebhorn on our very first episode when we talked about Heart of Midnight, because he was in that. And I like me some Jeb Ramhorn.
Jim Rams James.
Our favorite.
I like me some Jeb Ram James. And let's see, who else do we got here? Patsy Pease, good name also, as Joyce. Tom Rolfing as Ray, the killer. And I want to preface that this isn't a spoiler because you know who he is immediately. What do you want to say?
I want to say there's somebody left off this that made me feel like I was, because usually you're right and I'm wrong. But we also have Paul Gleason as Detective Frank whatever.
Okay.
Who's kind of a main character that I talk about in my summary, so.
Okay, good
FYI.
Point.
FYI.
You know, sometimes I miss things.
Not usually, though. It's usually me.
I didn't know Ray was the killer's name.
Yeah, his name
they
is Ray.
They talk about they it. Because when, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Ray.
Ray. He's
and
out
then
there.
Underwater. Last and very much least, there's a little unknown actor named Tom Hanks in this movie called Elliot. We might talk about him later. The music was done by Alexander and Mark Peskinoff. They did the original score. I'm going to talk about that probably at some point. Where can you watch this fucking fuckstick? It's on Apple TV for renting, Amazon for renting, Fandango for the renting, Google Play if you would like to renting it, on YouTube for free, I think.
Yeah, did you watch it on YouTube?
I paid.
Well, I sent you a link to watch it on YouTube, and I said I wasn't sure of the quality.
You sucker.
We didn't watch it on YouTube, though, so I don't know about the quality.
The YouTube comments were funny, though.
Oh, we can bring that.
Yeah. I'll bring them up later.
There are DVDs and Blu-rays available if you want to rent it from a movie store.
Renting. Yes. It's what's happening.
Yes, there's a lot of renting. What is this gall dang son of a gun all about there?
All right. I've taken notes and I've forgotten my glasses. So
perfect.
Everybody buckle up.
Work, Velma.
You want to pause and get
glasses? No. I'm okay. I'm young and my eyes are great. And it's like a 14. It's at least a 12-point font. I think I can handle it. Okay. So He Knows You're Alone opens in a movie theater. Two girlfriends are watching a horror movie, and one gets stabbed to death. We find out she was about to be married, which turns out to be our killer's deal. He likes slashing brides-to-be. Enter our main character, bride-to-be Amy. Amy is a college student engaged to Phil, who is a fucking douche. Phil and the boys are going to have a bachelor weekend, and Amy and her friends are staying in town. Amy goes to try on dresses and finds one, but the dressmaker gets slashed right after the fitting. We find out a little more about the killer, Ray. So we find it out because there's a flashback where it's like, hi, Ray, why are you here? So Ray was the jilted groom, and his bride left him for Frank, who's a cop, who's not the, like, lead detective on this case, but he does get involved with it. So yeah, there's wedding related case and the cops are on the trail and they know it's, so we know it's Ray the whole time. Amy has an ex named Marvin who seems really a lot cooler than Phil. And he works at the morgue and he's like a dork. So a cool dork, I guess I'm saying.
We'll see about that.
I don't know about that.
That's true.
Opinion.
He's better than Phil. No.
We don't even really like get to see Phil except for like one time.
Except being like, I'm going to bang some broads.
That's not what he says. He's calling, what's her face? Amy? He's calling her.
So she knows he's going to go bang some broads.
He's letting her know. That's polite.
Okay. Sorry. So there's Marvin. Sometimes I forget things, like I was saying. And then Amy also has a little sister and she's in charge of her for the weekend. Their other characters are Amy's friends, Joyce, who's boning a professor, and Nancy, who's trying to bone Tom Hanks, baby Tom Hanks. People get murdered.
As a baby.
Actual infant in the cradle. He's the hand that rocks it. People get murdered, some in creative ways. Amy and her ex, Marvin, fall back in love, and the movie plays out in standard slasher fashion with a little twist at the end.
Okay. Yeah, I think that sums it up. Trying to think if there's anything else. Yeah, I think that covers the plot line.
Yeah, and the detective.
Yeah, also I put the detective in there. Oh, yeah. the main one. I just kind of was focused on. Yeah,
he's
Lynn.
Also trying to find Ray.
And so it's one of those things where they know who did it the whole time, sort of like Columbo.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, like it starts off. Some people here have been on a Columbo kick.
We might be watching Columbo.
Someone might
right now
gonna be Columbo for Halloween and found the perfect jacket already.
Someone
just saying it has spots for all five of my dicks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't mind her if you 70s, see her out.
Nothing. Nothing wrong with Columbo or five dicks. Let's get into this thing. So just to kick it off, here's a little interesting quote from an article I found on a blog called NYC and Film. Seemingly taking place in some generic small town, He Knows You're Alone was actually filmed on New York's Staten Island over a period of just 18 days in December of 1979. And I want to emphasize that date because I think it's going to be important, because I want to talk about slashers and some history.
Oh, nice.
And we'll get into this a little bit. So He Knows You're Alone came out in the golden age of slashers, which is commonly agreed upon as the period between 1978 and 1984. So let's talk about that context a bit, just for a moment, to give you all a sense of the horror landscape at that time. So Halloween comes out in 1978, and that's basically the big turning point. And then a year later, in 1979, another important thing happened. Beth was born. Yay!
Yay! I was thinking that. I was like, this is a snapshot of when I was a baby, you know?
Exactly.
It's my birth year.
Mm-hmm.
So we already had some films that were kind of building up to this moment, like Psycho, Black Christmas, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Of course, we had the Giallos in Italy. They probably hadn't caught on right in America yet, but... So those were some of the things. And there were some other late 70s stuff like Blood Rage, Driller Killer, Tourist Trap, etc. I won't get into the whole filmography of the early slasher wave, but that's just to kind of give you a sense of where we're at. So this comes out in 1980, which is also when Friday the 13th was released, which was another big milestone in the history of slasher films. But the thing that's interesting to note, and I think this is kind of important, so Friday the 13th comes out May 19th, 1980. He Knows You're Alone comes out August 29th, 1980.
So he didn't get there quick enough.
So a mere 3 months later. So when you're looking up the history of slasher films, it can be easy to be like, this just stole this idea or this stole this idea. But the point I'm getting at here is He Knows You're Alone was relatively early in the big slasher wave that would dominate horror for the next half decade or more. So with that said, this film is often referred to as one of the early Halloween ripoffs.
Yeah, copycats, yeah.
So I thought it would be interesting to do a little compare and contrast. So from your perspectives, and I have a few ideas and a few notes here, but what similarities, if any, did you notice between this film and Halloween? And also, I want to throw out Psycho as a reference point, because mm-hmm. I thought there was a bit of influence from that film, possibly.
Yeah. The music.
Hell yeah.
I think there's like some like very similar notes, and also kind of Jaws. I don't know why, but I heard a little bit of like the Jaws theme.
Like that.
I was like, okay. I don't know. Other than that, I mean, it's just kind of like same idea of knowing like who the killer is pretty much automatically, and having like one central character being stalked by that.
And other people just kind of dropping like flies in the path. And yeah, the murderer being kind of this hulking, like he moves. I mean, he's a person much more fleshed out than Jason, but he is
kind of like almost supernatural in the sense of like, he's not like seen by everybody, and he's like kind of stalking people mm-hmm. in a way that makes them really paranoid too. Like,
yeah,
it's definitely similar in that they're trying to make him like kind of elusive and like, I don't know, good at hiding. Cause I guess he is, he's just good at hiding because he's not supernatural.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That was one of my notes, is I think Ray, there's a lot of shots of him lurking behind bushes mm-hmm. and generally just stalking women, kind of slowly lurking around where
lurking.
you get a shot of him. Obviously, he has no mask, but his presence during the opening stages of the film definitely are reminiscent of the way Michael Myers mm-hmm. moves through.
Oh, did I say Jason when I meant Michael? Sorry. I'm the worst about slashers.
Okay.
It's hard. They all have
they're
like
similar.
Sit in the corner.
Like civilian names, like Jason.
No, but I know Michael Myers. I'm embarrassed.
Freddy.
Can you do like a little voiceover where your voice goes,
Michael.
Yeah,
do that. That'd
I can, yeah. I'm not going to, but I
no,
could.
Please. That'd be fun.
So, Ray, our killer, is primarily a stab man.
Yeah.
Not a birthday boy stab man, just a stab man.
Tragically.
He's a wedding day stab man,
wedding
I guess.
Wedding boys.
Does hate weddings.
Wedding boy stab man.
Whereas Michael Myers would just kill people in a variety of ways, mm-hmm. just kind of whatever he had
and dogs.
At him. But that kind of made me think about Psycho and Norman Bates, who is also a stab man.
Yeah.
And there's definitely some moments. There's a shower scene in this movie that it kind of sets up like it's going to be the Psycho shower scene, but then it doesn't happen.
Uh-huh.
But there is another scene where there's almost like a similar sound effect with the
Yes, I remember that.
And so like, I think there's definitely some sort of like Psycho stabbing in this.
Can I do one quick little punchline, which is Mama's Boy Stab Man?
Mama Boy Stab Man.
That's a... Psycho. I'm sorry. I'm
yeah,
out here.
That's true.
Okay. I'll try to cut it in.
Like father, like son jokes are not landing today.
We got this.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay.
So there, I saw one reference on a blog called Meat Hook Cinema.
Oh,
fierce.
That noted the autumnal street shots, which is interesting because this is shot in like the dead of the winter in New York.
Uh-huh.
Apparently it was cold as fuck where they were filming it.
We could see that when I remember one of the scenes when Nancy was running, or the girls were running together and being like, they were wearing just like jogging suits, like, you know, hoodies and sweats, and they look so fucking cold.
They probably,
yeah.
You could just tell, you know, like in their body language, they were like,
yeah. Indeed. But then also we have Detective Len Gamble, who is kind of our Dr. Loomis for this film.
Right. That makes, yeah, the foe.
Frank, why'd you get me out of bed for this one? She was getting married, Len. Next week.
I bet it's him.
Oh, wait. Don't jump to any conclusions. I mean, it might be a coincidence.
Coincidence?
Yeah.
No, Frank, he's back. He's giving me a second chance.
He's giving me a second chance.
But he's also a bit bumbling and ineffective, I think, and appears to be purely motivated by his own personal revenge, whereas I feel like Dr. Loomis has some, like, grand stopping evil plan.
No,
maybe it's just because he's more of a academic and Detective Gamble is, like, a hothead detective.
Small town.
He's not even. He's, like, the most confusing character in this entire movie to me. Like, the fact, like, his detective ability confuses me greatly. Like, he, like, has, like, a conversation with another police officer, and he's, like, telling them what to do, and they're like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to go take a nap. Because it took forever to get here. Oh, my God. And then when he's, like, saving people, he's not, like, helpful. He's just like, get out of here. Fuck off. What are you doing here, scared girl who almost got stabbed? Get the fuck out of here, bitch. Like,
yeah, he is. I don't know. Yeah,
I kind of like him.
He does not. He's an interesting dude. Like, he's very entertaining, but, like, he appears to suck at his job.
Yeah.
And everyone just keeps talking about how he's, like, a lunatic, too, but they're just kind of letting him do what he wants. They're like, yeah, you know, he's just crazy, but.
Yeah.
He's not asking if anyone wants to suck on a tomato.
We're giving him 36 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. I might trust the sheriff from Poor Pretty Eddie over Detective
Glenn Gamble.
Dangle or whatever.
Dong Langle.
Yeah. Okay, so here's where I wanted to go with this. So this is right in the beginning stages of the slasher wave, but this is essentially a gore-free slasher. Clearly, there isn't a lack of violence, and there are some shocking images. The head in a fish tank comes to mind.
It's great.
But for the most part, the violence is not graphic, even though you know it's happening. And there's a little note that I picked up from a blog called Final Girl that you might have heard of. Director Armand Mastroianni wanted this movie to be different from the norm. In a 1999 interview with Fangoria, he talked about his intent for the movie. That was the time that Friday the 13th was about to come out, and there was a lot of very gory stuff being shown on screen. I thought it might be a good idea to head a little more in the opposite direction. So he felt like de-emphasizing the violence somewhat and keeping it a little less graphic, hopefully making it more genuinely frightening by allowing audiences to use their heads.
Right.
So with that idea in mind, what did you think about the sort of lack of gore in this? Was it a benefit? Was it a detractor from it being effective? Was the violence actually more kind of mentally terrifying because of that? Or did it not make a difference at all?
I kind of feel like it didn't make a difference, but also I think maybe you didn't see gore, but it was just like slashers, which is kind of why I sometimes struggle with them, just like young women being fucking terrorized. Which,
yeah. I mean, there's a head.
A head in a fish tank, which is cool.
But
so maybe more gore would have made it more fun. Like sometimes, as we all know, over-the-top gore makes it more fun because it's so ridiculous, right?
Well, yeah, because I don't know. Like, I wasn't, like, the whole time, like, where's the violence? But
yeah,
I do think, like, it wasn't, like, to its benefit to be, like, the audience can just infer that people are getting, like, cut in half. That's, like, really cool and, like, editorial of us, you know? We're so against the grain.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I don't think it was, like, bad. Maybe it would have, like, added a little bit more, like, going on, I guess.
Like, more fun if it was really stupid.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of gore I like, when it's, like, so ridiculous.
Yeah, not, like, super realistic, just over the top.
Yeah, like, heads, human heads on spider bodies and stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty.
I guess it's not gore.
That's what I want.
I found myself being surprisingly not turned off by the kind of lack of explicit violence, whereas, you know, there's clearly violence happening, but I didn't think the lack of gore was a detriment to my viewing experience in this movie. There might have been some other things that were
detriments, yeah.
But that was an interesting revelation watching this, that you know, okay, I don't necessarily need blood spraying out of a wound for the scene to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think in that sense, interesting choice.
Yeah.
Especially in this era where, like, you know,
yeah, it was all about
trying
ripping
different things,
ripping limbs and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I do remember saying while we were watching, like, is this movie PG? I didn't notice it.
TV. Like, that's kind of what I thought was going on. And yeah, I'm not, like, shitting on them for, like, trying a new idea. Like, I'm not trying to hate on it. I don't think it, like, you know, didn't benefit the movie for there to be violence, because you don't always need that. That's true. You know, it was still like suspenseful in certain ways, and it's not like they didn't like do violent things. There were many violent things. Lots of stabbing, you know, your standard stabbing.
There were tits, which are much more dangerous than stabbing.
Violence, yeah.
We all know this.
Yes.
Naked female form.
And this has been referenced in many articles, but apparently the opening kill scene in this movie, which was a stab through the back of a theater seat.
That was cool.
Is likely an influence for the opening scene in Scream 2.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I don't necessarily have any confirmation of that. People have noted it, but I don't know if it actually was an influence, but it seems like potentially it was. Then there's also this meta slasher element at the beginning, which mm-hmm. I thought was kind of interesting, where the characters that we're introduced to right off the bat are watching a slasher film in the theater. And one of them is clearly uncomfortable. The other one is into it. And it's sort of like a very generic slasher setup that they're watching. But the other thing I'll note about that is that I feel like it didn't follow up on that as commentary. Like, that was the setup for the first kill, and maybe it was too early to like get into meta slasher commentary, but it was an interesting addition to the film.
It was kind of cool at the beginning. Mm-hmm. yeah I liked it.
Me too.
Yeah, started off with a bang.
I think it was crazy though that that's the spot they were making out at, like,
oh, in the movie
was crazy. Like, because
it's like a fake ass movie.
I know, but like, just imagine being like, yes, in the fog by the dead tree,
it's romantic,
is where I will kiss you.
The graveyard.
And touch your knee.
I mean, sounds about right to me. Okay, so yes, this is a slasher film, as we have indicated through our discussion thus far. And obviously, slasher films are famous for being notoriously mean and nasty to women. But this film's premise is interesting because it puts an emphasis on women as victims because of the whole brides being killed angle.
And getting married is a victimization.
Yeah, it's basically right. Like, you know, putting yourself in harm's way.
It's true.
It's so let's dig into this a little bit. So there's a critic named Robin Wood, who wrote for American Horrors, Essays on the Modern American Horror Film, that the film makes a highly sophisticated attempt to analyze violence against women in terms of male possessiveness and the fear of female autonomy. And I don't necessarily agree with the phrase highly sophisticated in this statement. But I do
an attempt.
I do like the point the author's making as a conversation starter here. So I also found an academic article named Women Still in Danger, a look at incel rhetoric in the 1980 slasher film He Knows You're Alone by Vincent Beck. So yes, there is a full academic article written about this movie. But before we dig into some of the main points of that article, did anything jump out to you in this film that would indicate that the writer or director was trying to make any particular statement about violence against women? Or was the bride murder angle just a clever excuse to knock off a bunch of broads?
I don't know. Men were definitely portrayed as, at best, dumb shits, and at worst, sinister throughout kind of the whole movie.
And I liked the conversation the girls had about marriage at, like, the very beginning when you're, like, kind of introduced to Amy, where, like, the whole conversation was about, like, Phil, like, wanting Amy to not work, and mm-hmm. how, like, mm-hmm. they were all talking about how, like, it's so ridiculous how, like, men are like that. And they all told her, too, like, you don't have to get married.
You don't have to get married. Yeah, that was
You know, like, that's what they said. So I thought, like, that was interesting. I kind of liked that. They were just like, don't get married. Oh, my God. Just don't do it. That sounds like a terrible idea. Especially, like, since she obviously liked the fucking forensics man more. Even though I don't know about him.
I think I must have forgotten something, because I always do, about Marvin. Because I just thought he was, like, a nice dork till the end. Did I fuck up?
He worked in a morgue.
Is that all?
That's really not it.
Well, I got some points about him, but
yeah,
you can continue. You were on one.
I mean, I don't want to, like, take too much of the time about it, but
No, this is, I think this is a
big... This is ladies' time, bitch.
I don't like the trope of men who are like, don't marry him, marry me.
Exactly.
Like, that always annoys me because I just think it's dumb. And to me, like, Marvin's not really that much better than Phil because he had to, like, lose someone he cared about to, like, recognize her value. Not to get, like, too introspective or, like, not introspective is not the right word, but, like, think too deep about, like, that plot right. line. I also don't like that he, like, pokes his head through the dressing room.
He does just, he definitely invades her personal space and does not have boundaries and is, like... Yeah, but I think he was written to be the sympathetic character.
Yeah, for by a man. Sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, I just like didn't like that. And I don't like, again, that trope of like, you should marry me,
right.
even though you broke up with me right. because I was mean to you.
You're strong and independent. Or no, he was away. That's why they broke
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but they broke up. I think, yeah, he wasn't like a jerk like Phil, but it was probably because of like him leaving and
he went away to school or something. They talked about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
But she makes the point of emphasizing that like she broke up with him, yeah. like she left him.
I was thinking of reordering my points that I wanted to cover from this article, but I think I'll just go in order and we'll go back to the Marvin thing. So, the same year this came out, in 1980, Siskel and Ebert began referring to most slasher films as women in danger films or women-hating films.
Oh.
And they kind of put this complex description of these upon slashers. So, the films do not care about the art of filmmaking, do not play with form to create an opinion of the violence they show. These films essentially desire to show women screaming in abject terror on screen. The women are helpless, isolated, are not given any depth, personality, or character development, and appear to be punished for some level of independence in society, and are often scantily clad or sexualized in their connection to the violence in the film. And the author of the article questions whether He Knows You're Alone defies this categorization, noting that the film both punishes women for their promiscuity while also creating developed women characters who create space for the expression of women's sexuality and doubts on traditional marriage.
Interesting.
Furthermore, the women in this film are shown as independent, intelligent, and interesting. And the film seems to punish young women who plan to give up their independence for tradition through this focus on marriage. And the key point here is that gender is built into the killer's motivation. So it's not just like, you know, there's a murderer who's randomly killing broads. It's kind of set up in the premise of the film that the reason the killer is killing most of the people in this movie is because they're women.
He kills the dressmaker, though.
Yeah, that's the only man that dies in this movie.
And the professor.
And
oh, that's true. There's two.
And that was actually kind of like almost scary. Do you guys remember like his weird faces that he made? I kind of thought that was cunty. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah.
He looked really scary. He had a weird face going on there.
Oh, sure. Ray or the professor? Ray, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get back to this Marvin thing. Because I think this is...
Marvin.
The key piece of this movie that I thought was interesting, and I noted it while we were watching the movie, but I didn't really craft the language to talk about it in a cohesive way. So Amy's being stalked by this killer, but throughout the film, she's also kind of being stalked by Marvin.
Yeah, you're right.
Her ex, who wants her to not marry her fiancé and marry him instead. Mm-hmm. And the article points out that Marvin won't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. And he tells the story at one point in the film where he went on a date in high school.
Yeah.
And he was trying to bang this girl. She said no. And he respected that. But then his big point was... It turned out to be a mistake because apparently his date had eventually gave in to guys that wouldn't take no for an answer. So Marvin also pushes this narrative that women can be stolen from men, essentially reducing them to property.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of this interesting point. And the article has this interesting pull quote. Marvin has learned and is telling Amy and the audience that if a man ignores a woman's no enough times, he will be entitled to get what he wants. This lesson is further reinforced when Amy eventually does leave her fiancé for Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, I have so many. Yeah. First of all, I was about to be like, man, I can't believe I agree with Siskel and Ebert about something. But then I thought about that a little more, which is a deeper dive in terms of maybe some of these movies.
Well, this is from the academic.
I know, article. But oh, yeah. Earlier.
Yeah.
The idea of slashers and women in danger and it just being, you know, women that are like two-dimensional and in their underwear. And I'm like, well, maybe that did, you know, there is a lot of violence against women and maybe there was some kind of pushing that those movies caused. And then B, back to Marvin, A, you guys are right. I don't know. I just like fell for the like setup of this guy's the good guy. Because I like was conditioned to hate Phil from the beginning.
Yeah, Phil is annoying. It's just like, I think also with this movie too, like it probably is trying to make like commentary that at least at that time, no one like really had made in a slasher.
Right.
But it's still like reinforcing extremely harmful stereotypes towards women by also making like the character that's supposed to be good a literal stalker who's like, but if I keep stalking you, right. Eventually,
but maybe
you'll like me more. Well, she's also in a vulnerable position,
yep.
Right?
Afraid for her life.
Maybe they did that on purpose. It sounds like maybe you're supposed to have the reaction that you guys had. And
do you think maybe with the ending? But
because yeah, she get. I mean, yeah. I shit, forgot what I was gonna say.
That's okay. One last point on this topic. And no spoilers, but, you know, Phil, her fiancé, ends up being not a great guy either, but we won't get into why in case you watch this. But there's this concept of a cycle of violent men in this movie.
That's
and
true.
And the quote is, these bad women, Amy and the first bride, create a cycle of violent men in the film. It is because of the women's choices that these men become violent, with no responsibility put on the violent men to decide their own actions.
This That's is true. So much like the ideas that we're like trying to go back to in this country right now.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated.
But it is like the real, like, you know, the idea of women having agency
let's,
being
let's
such a
threat. Let's make it great again.
I just can't tell, like, yeah, if they're like actually making that point or
if we're
it's,
putting our lens.
Yeah, like if I don't know if they were thinking that big, but also they could have been because people have had these ideas forever. Like this isn't a new concept.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be like something anyone has to argue with because it just feels like common sense. But common sense is not. Is not available.
Word. Okay, let's do something more fun than women being killed.
What's more fun than
more
that?
Fun, yeah.
Well, not many things, but I'm going to try anyways. So one thing that Beth noted while we were watching this was the nice selection of secondary locations, as she referred to them. In other words, the location scouts did a fantastic job, and I agree with that. So I think this is one of the greatest things about this movie is kind of some of the places that they shot the film. It made it look a lot better than it would have if they were just on some shitty cheap set.
Yeah.
You know, is there anything that stood out to you as like key kind of like, oh, that's really cool in terms of a location idea?
The movie theater looked like the Baghdad.
Oh,
it had
yeah.
those little bathrooms where you go down the stairs to like the little old doors and.
Yeah. So here's a note from that NYC and film article, which if you're a film location nerd, check out this blog, NYC and film. This dude scouts the hell out of like every movie and finds like every locale that they shot in. And it was a really cool article. But the movie theater that they shot in, it was actually a few. The exterior shot was the former Highland Plaza Cinemas on Staten Island. The interior, at least some of it, was done in the ornate St. George Theater, located not too far from the Staten Island Ferry. And there was maybe one more location that they shot that in.
That must be the one I love.
Yeah. I thought the amusement park was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, It's always fun when somebody gets on a creepy ghost ride.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that haunted house was very, like, interesting. Yeah. I liked the way they shot that scene.
I almost think that was one of the most effective scary moments in the film when they were on the little haunted house ride.
Mm-hmm. Her and her sister, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that they chose to make Marvin a morgue worker and then ultimately went to, like, shoot in the morgue. I don't know if they used a real morgue, but, like, that as a setting was cool. The wedding dress shop was interesting. Mm-hmm. Amy's house was very cool, very like classic old school New York. The ice cream shop was really kind of fun also. So yeah, I think the locations in this film were, they kind of made it a little better than it would have been if it was just like a camp or something similar to the era.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Suburbs, yeah. Right. I mean, I think it was supposed to feel small town, even though it was one of the boroughs.
Apparently that's what Staten Island used to be like.
But everywhere used to be like.
Yeah, it was just like Beaverton or whatever.
Make it great again.
Okay, so one of the most notable details about this film, if you're not a horror or slasher obsessive, is that it marks the film debut of an obscure actor named Thomas Hanks.
Tom.
Too bad they don't have a roller coaster.
Thank God for small things.
Don't you like to be stared at?
No.
Most people do, actually. I mean, like to be scared. It's something primal, something basic. Horror movies and the roller coasters and the House of Horror ride.
I want to go on that next.
And you can face death without any real fear of dying. It's safe. You can leave the movie or get off the ride with a vicarious thrill and the feeling that you just conquered death. One hell of a first-class rush.
Don't tell me you're a psych major.
Oh, a good deductive guess. I'm most interested in fear, the emotion of fear. For example, why, after seeing Psycho, were so many people afraid to take showers?
Not me. I never saw the movie.
You were afraid, right?
You bet.
Fear fascinates me. People pay to be scared. When you think about it, it's real ridiculous.
Give me something. Ridiculous. That's the word I was looking for.
So there's this interesting interview I found with Tom Hanks on Letterman in which he talks at length about his experience in this film, does a bit of shit talking about the movie and slashers in general, which is worth a watch if you like to watch actors talk about how they got their starts. What did you make of Tom Hanks' seemingly random appearance in this film?
Gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, he didn't do a lot, did he?
He loves to trip people.
He looked like he had eyeliner on.
Yeah. Mm.
And yeah, he was a dick too.
He loves to mansplain psychology while only being in an intro to psych class.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's like, I'm an intro. Yeah,
I'm an intro. And also, another fun fact is the people in the YouTube comments love Tom Hanks.
That's funny.
And there are funny comments all about Tom Hanks and some other weird stuff. But
like what? Like they want to bone him or they like want him to be their dad?
No, it's very confusing. There's like or one both. Person who yeah, commented both. Like five comments.
It's probably Tom Hanks.
No. there's like that.
People... Oh my God, Tom Hanks is so good in this movie.
Look at Tom Hanks the killer? This is Tom Hanks' debut.
Username Tim Hanks.
Yeah. It's Tim interesting. Hanks. They really love him. And they want us to all know that this is his first movie he was ever in. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're really into his vibe.
They tripping like women.
They like that he trips women. They're upset that he's not the killer. And they're upset that he had a very small role in this film. And I'm with them.
Yeah, I heard Justice his role's pretty small.
For Tom okay. Hank. Now, let's fix this.
There's a rumor out there that he was supposed to have a death scene in this movie. He was supposed to be killed off, but the filmmakers were afraid that he was so likable that the audience would be angered. Would be
so he's already that likable before he's America's dad.
Yeah, no, like his 6.5 minute appearance in this, like, was yeah, so they were afraid he was so likable that they didn't want to kill him off.
I was upset.
It's kind of a bummer. I would have liked to have him in the like pantheon of
yeah, killed.
Well, I
of getting killed in your
Kevin
slasher.
Bacon with his butt out.
Yeah, or just like I also was sad because they just established that like you know Nancy and him like got together, and then all of a sudden, no more Tom Hanks, no more fun, no more romance.
Yeah.
Zero Tom Hanks. I want to say about Nancy really quick. This is a good... The actress who played Nancy, whose head ends up in a fish tank, was spoiler. Like a... Oh, well, I mean, we already talked about it. It's mid-movie. She was like a reputed theater coach and like theater actress and director who coached famous people, including Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And that new remake of A Star Is Born was dedicated to her, which I just thought was kind of interesting life arc.
Yeah.
For someone who is in a slasher movie and their head ends up in a fish tank. There were a lot of people in this movie actually were theater actors, which I was, you know, it doesn't make you a better actor. It's just different.
Yeah. Let's play a little game called Actors That Got Their Start in Horror.
Oh, this is fine.
Well, it's not really a game, but is there anybody that you know of that you want to shout out as like their first film or like big break was a horror film?
I think George Clooney.
What was he in again? For some reason, I didn't have him on my list.
Yeah, I mean, he's on in Killer Clowns from Outer Space,
Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes.
No. That's what I mean.
Some like beginning scene of, I don't remember if it's a parody horror movie, but he plays a cop in the very beginning and he gets murked. Also,
Yeah, what's showing up is not. It's like showing me Dust Till Dawn. I had a list and he's, Return to Horror High.
Yeah. That one.
I don't even know if I know that one. Maybe I do.
Yeah. Killer Tomatoes. Sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. Return to Horror High. I mean, obviously, I saw Brad Pitt's first movie, I think, was a horror movie. You have a list, though, huh?
Yeah.
I have a bunch of stuff if you want to give up.
Throw them out there.
Jennifer Aniston, Troll.
Yeah.
Dreyfus was also in Troll.
She's in Troll 2.
No, you're wrong. You're both wrong. Okay.
We're ready.
I'm going to start at the top of my list. Obviously, Kevin Bacon. We already talked about him Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Aniston, Leprechaun.
Oh, that's what I meant.
In 1992.
Troll.
Although she was in some TV stuff, which she was in a Ferris Bueller TV series. Aww. Did you know that was a thing?
Hammy hates that.
He was also uncredited in the movie Mac and Me. Remember that?
Mac and Me!
E.T. ripoff? Yeah.
The McDonald?
No.
The McDonald E.T. ripoff?
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Jason Alexander and Holly Hunter in The Burning.
Yeah, that I knew.
Jennifer Connelly in Dario Argento's Phenomena in 1985.
Shot to that fly.
Obviously, we got the Johnny Depp Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
Leo DiCaprio, Critters 3 in 1993. He did some TV work before that, but not a lot. Patricia Arquette's first appearance in anything was Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors from 1987.
Babe Alert.
Which I love that movie.
Super good.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Troll.
Okay, I was right about that.
1986. Here's an interesting one. Anya Taylor-Joy, The Witch, was her first credited film role from 2015.
Well, remember that? We were all
which
like...
Which seems so new, but like...
She's young.
But now it's like she's done a million things.
But remember when we saw that movie, we were like, who the fuck is this person? She was just magical.
Oh, yeah. She's like meant to play strange witchy characters or be around witches. Like, that's just that wrap her vibe. Her
My boyfriend, Sam Rockwell, was in a film called Clown House in 1989. The director of that film apparently was a sexual predator of young boys.
Was Sam okay? We don't know.
I hope so.
Was Sam a boy?
Hope so. Sam is a boy.
Was he a boy?
She's wondering age.
I'm not sure.
No, he's older than us.
He may have transitioned into a boy after.
No,
this. I'm not sure.
Was he a little boy?
Age wise, no.
He had to be
a teen or in his early 20s.
Yeah, he was probably in his early 20s or something. Yeah. I'm not sure. And then here's the last one. It's kind of fun. Adam Scott, who had been working in TV for several years before his first movie. Any guesses on what his first horror movie was in the mid-90s?
Never mind. I was going to say Krampus.
Oh, he is in Krampus. I don't know.
Hellraiser Bloodline, which was the fourth film in the Hellraiser franchise.
Wow, never seen it.
Me neither.
So I think part of the fun of horror is seeing these people that pop up in these movies that end up being big stars and their first credits are... sometimes shitty, sometimes good horror films. And then eventually they come back and, you know, it becomes part of their weird cult iconography.
Is watching
Has
them.
Tom Hanks ever done another horror film?
Why are you know. Why is it singular with
what
you?
What are you talking about?
Tom Hanks.
She keeps I don't doing... know what you're talking
is
about.
Is Hank Tom
Make her stop. Hank Tom's.
I keep saying it right.
Okay. She just can't believe
but
he's
did he return? I don't think so.
I don't know. He played a bad guy once recently, right? And that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Am I thinking about the wrong that Tom Hanks with an S on the end? Is yeah. that what I'm thinking about?
That's what I've been saying.
Uh-huh.
Well, we've done our big one on talking about this. We clocked a few things.
We clarked it, yeah.
Let's get in to some business. Very important business.
Business.
An obscurity rating on this son of a bitch. IMDb votes 4,511. Almost up to our threshold, which is interesting. I kind of didn't know that until I looked it up.
I think it's changed. Yeah. I mean, it does change.
IMDb critics, 42. Rotten Tomatoes reviews, 11. And it is available at 5 places as far as I could find, giving us a solid, fat, middle-of-the-road 5 as obscurity. I had this thought. Kind of want to revise the obscurity rating.
You've had this thought before.
I know, but I had an idea here. I'm going to post it right now. What about maybe taking Rotten Tomatoes out?
Okay.
Or maybe leaving it in, but doing kind of like an average user, like an average person review count between IMDb, Letterboxd, and Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. I'll have to like, you know, do some reconnoitering of what that exactly means, but I don't know.
Yeah, so you mean like just the aggregate, those three,
yeah,
is how you get your number.
Yeah, because it like we don't really take into account just random people that leave reviews on these sites.
Right.
It's just, you know, we have the votes, we have the critics. I don't know. I'll think about that a little bit more. If you have any thoughts on that, hit us up at gemhuntpodcast@gmail.com or get on our website and use our comment section.
Oh yeah. I'm gonna get on there after this.
Okay, let's do the thing that we love to do at the end of these episodes where we do our vote. We're going to vote upon this film. We're going to count to 3. We're going to close our eyes as we normally do, and we will give a thumbs up or a thumbs down about whether we think this is a gem or a turd. Okay, here's our vote. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, different. Different.
Different. I like that. That's good. Because okay. I was conflicted.
Yeah.
Here is our thoughts on our final vote. Not our thoughts and feelings, just our vote.
Only thoughts.
We had 2 down, 1 up, which I guess makes this a semi-turd.
Yeah, firm turd.
Now we will do our thoughts and feelings to describe why we voted the way we voted, and is Beth's movie. She can start with her thoughts and feelings.
I'm also the lone thumbs up, which is not a
true
normal pattern. I thought it was fun. It was short. There were some great scenes in it. It was stupid, and I just enjoyed it. And so I think it's one of those things where, like, okay, if I don't think this is fun, why do I even like horror movies? Because this is, like, standard. It's, like, a standard fucking horror movie. And it was fun.
Yeah.
I also, really quick, I don't think I said it this time, shout out to Dave Hama, who recommended this movie. I'm on my people recommending movies to me thing true again. And that is who recommended this movie to us.
Although I will note that as he was describing the movie, he may have been describing a different movie.
Well, this is the name of a movie that he gave us.
But he did, yes, he did drop this name, which is what...
That's funny.
...was the catalyst for
see,
us.
See, again, I don't remember anything.
Buggy, what do you think?
I think I agree. Like, I was conflicted in the sense of this is a standard horror movie, so I'm never mad about that. Like, I'll always watch a movie like this with this, like, same format. But I don't know. I feel like I always keep coming back to when I'm doing, like, my reviewer rating, like, would I recommend this to people, I guess? Or is this, like, something I'm going to, like, watch over and over again? Or would I watch this again? And, well, I think I'd watch it again. I don't think I just recommend it to, like, everybody. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it would cross my mind as, like, oh, I saw this movie. You should watch it. But I enjoyed it. I like Tom Hanks. And
oh my God, you little fucking troll.
Even though he could not save this movie, I do also like the, like, interesting discourse about the potential statement this movie was trying to make. I didn't, like, know that prior, which also kind of made me feel a little different about the film itself.
Yeah.
Good points. Good points. You know, I, as a sort of a fan of slashers in, like, a half-assed Fairweather fan kind of way, I thought this was an interesting entry into the slasher canon, better than I think I would have expected it to be. There were definitely some things I liked about it. I thought the cool locations and the look and the feel and the atmosphere was pretty effective. Despite being a kind of a Halloween ripoff, I thought the music was well done. That was one thing that I was going to note earlier when we were talking about the similarities between this and Halloween, is that, you know, the score is very much a Halloween ripoff. As the film goes on, the music gets more interesting, and there's, like, some really interesting musical selections that they use that I thought were effective. But what I didn't like is that it just kind of moved a bit too slow for me. And the moments of tension and the kill scenes didn't really make up for that slow movement, I didn't think. And there wasn't that much to it. Like you noted, it was just kind of like a standard run-of-the-mill horror film of this era. Just kind of a slasher, not that memorable. Like, I can see myself kind of forgetting everything about this movie in not too long a time.
I have already, yes.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the interesting things when we were talking about this after we watched it is, what are we going to talk about when we do this episode? Which I think that's kind of telling about a movie. It's like, you can't think of anything you want to talk about. Was it really that memorable?
Right.
And then the last thing I'll note is that, you know, we have this killer with a clear motivation, but not a lot of backstory.
Yeah.
And that kind of rubbed me the wrong way just because I was like, okay, we have this very specific pointed idea about this killer, but then we also don't really get any explanation. And then I think I noted someone mentioned this in a review of like, how many women did this guy have to stalk? Only to find out that they, like, weren't planning on getting married anytime soon. Like, how did he find
these? What's his, maybe he's got some, he's, like, on people's registries.
He knows, like, the haunts, too. He's, like, going to the bride shop.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he just hangs out at the bridal shop.
But then he killed the dressmaker, so, like, he didn't do that before?
He was trying to kill her, but then, like, the dressmaker happened to, you know, surprise him.
Yeah.
But then the other issue was, like, so his whole motivation is killing soon-to-be brides. Why kill all the other people?
And also, the name of the movie is He Knows You're Alone, and literally how many people that get killed are not alone? Most of them.
But I have a complaint. Right.
That's one totally. Thing I have to
he
say.
He knows you're with at okay, least so one other person.
Yeah. But I also think it's crazy how many times, like, especially Amy is alone. Like, and that not- is flabber. Like, it honestly is so weird to me. Like, I don't understand, especially with, like, some of the, like, later kills. I'm like, just go together to different places.
Well, that's always the thing,
you don't
right?
have to wait. You know, at this one place, or like do this blah, blah, blah thing, or like split up. One person calls the police and the other one just goes into danger. Like, to me, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, that's, you know, why you're supposed to be yelling at the screen and like.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Impassioned.
Fair point.
Well, this did have a few other working titles, which I forgot to note. But if you're a nerd and you're on YouTube all day, look up the Tom Hanks interview on Letterman, and he talks about some of the other names that this movie was going under.
Yeah, there was like Blood Wedding or something.
Yeah, Blood Wedding. I think one of them was just called Streak or something. Yeah. None of them are great names.
But Blood Wedding makes more sense than He Knows You're Alone, because they must have been trying to capitalize on some wave.
Maybe.
In terms of
that
marketing.
Name does, like, I feel like, catch more attention than like Blood Wedding, even though... I don't know.
Wedding.
If I had to choose between Blood Wedding or He Knows You're Alone, I think we all know which one
Blood
I'm going
wedding.
For.
It's fewer words.
Yeah. Tom Hanks agree.
Oh, my fucking God.
Trollio.
Okay. You know what time it is now? It's time for...
vomit time!
It's time for vomit time. It's time for special time!
Special time!
Beth, it's your special time. Who do you want to talk about? Why? What? Where do you want to talk about it?
Yesterday. Pink. No, not pink. That's a person as well as a color.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Pink, the R&B artist.
It's going to be brief. I just want to talk about, because I feel like it follows the movie stars and horror movies. I just want to talk about how much I love Mia Goth. And I don't care if Mia Goth is married to Shia LaBeouf. LaBeouf? Oh my God. I don't know how to... Shia LaBeouf.
Boof it.
I know. I've been set up for failure. I just love her.
Boof it.
From the moment I saw her in the Suspiria remake, which I loved so much more than I expected to, because I don't watch Lars von Trier movies, because I don't want to punish myself like that. I just fucking love her. Her name, her full name is Mia Gypsy Mello de Silva Goth. Like, that is your born to be
full name.
Somebody. True. And she's Portuguese. That's why she has a name like that. Her grandma was like a Portuguese or a Brazilian. Sorry, she's Brazilian. Her family is Portuguese speaking. Brazilian movie star, big time, who ended up being homeless recently.
Damn.
And there was this big her grandma is 85 and was like wandering the streets in Brazil with dementia. And so of course people were like, Mia, what the fuck are you doing, your grandma? So she flew her to London so her mom could take care of her.
Fault.
Okay. Shia LaBeouf. I know what his name is.
Do you?
Yeah, and he is her fucking baby's daddy. So there's all these controversies, but I just love her. She's so good in the Ty West
films.
Sorry,
I'm laughing about that because it's actually really not funny at all.
What a dick he is.
Oh, he's terrible.
First of all, this is where it all ties together. I realize that I liked Marvin and I'm a Shia LaBeouf.
Don't.
Apologist.
You're not.
A little bit. I'm not.
You're
really?
Not. Don't say that.
But I no. know I'm wrong.
You can't be, because he's actually terrible. Read the FK Twigs article.
I know.
Read the FK Twigs article and then come
Isn't
back to me with your apology.
I know. Anyway, I'm talking about. Care. And FKA see, here we are. Twigs. We're talking about the man. I'm talking about Mia Goth. She's
Sorry.
So fucking good in X. And Pearl and Maxine, but it's mostly just how I just love how she looks, and I'm shallow. The other controversy is that actor that she's kicked in the head.
All right. I think that's fierce.
Apparently, I mean, and I'm not, the lawsuit is not done. It's proceeding. But the guy, the extra that said that she did that has actually gone to jail for scams in the past. Oh. So I'm just saying.
Therefore, she had a valid reason to kick him in the head.
Well, therefore, she might not have. Or he.
Oh, that's true.
She might have, it might not have been, she might have kicked him in the head and then he turned it into a story so that he could make money off of it. And A24 is standing beside her. But anyway, I love Mia Goth. She's gorgeous angel, has never done anything wrong, has made perfect life choices.
She'll be a good actress.
32 on October 25th. So spooky season, baby.
She's great in Emma.
I haven't seen that. She's great in Infinity Pool. That's the one she's in. Is that she's in one of the Cronenberg, the kid or David?
Brandon Cronenberg.
That was a great movie. She was great in that.
As Pearl, as Maxine.
Great. Really fun to look at.
True. And, she has a very smooth face.
And in real life, she has an adorable British accent.
Is it British?
Yeah, because she was born in London. And that's what I have to say about Mia Goth. And none of our heroes are perfect.
No.
And, oh, I could say something right now that I'm not going to say. Sing about people's heroes. Sometimes your life choices affect how you die. I don't know. That's all I have to say.
Hills and what have you.
Dying on a hill or something.
Yeah.
We're going to get fired by ABC. You have to stop.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Unfortunately, no one's paying us. And we have no contracts. And maybe Jimmy Kimmel can find a job with A24, who seems to stand behind their
or with
their
us.
Talent.
Yeah. He could work
with
us. Oh,
he could do a guest spot. I bet he knows a little about horror movies.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, okay. You don't think so?
Well, before our dog like starts Kimmel. Freaking out, just to close this out, I have selected my next movie. Which I was going back and forth between a lot of things. I had a handful of ideas, most of which I had it on good authority were pieces of shit. And also I'm working on my October list. So
it'll be up soon.
Yeah, it's hard to pick a movie when you're also picking 30 other movies for your watch list in October. But I decided to go with a film called Fear No Evil from 1981.
Thanks.
Directed by Frank LaLoggia, known for traumatizing children and young teens with his 1988 film, Lady in White. All I know is that this movie is insane and satanic.
Oh, I like Satan.
It might be a piece of shit. It might be fun. We'll find out. I also want to say, check out our website, gemhuntpod.com, not podcast. gemhuntpod.com and join our Blue Sky. You can find us at Gem Hunt on Blue Sky. Join our fuck book page.
We do still have an Instagram. It's Dirt Dog Cinema. We're still there.
Yeah, we are still the Dirt Dogs.
That is who we are, so whatever.
Yeah. That's our vibe.
And we're filthy and we're dirty. We still don't have a shower.
Yeah, our bath. Hopefully next time we record, we'll have a shower, a bathtub, a sink, and walls, and a floor in our bathroom.
Woo! Manifest.
Yeah, okay. Believe.
Well, I hope that no one knows that we are not alone. Mm-hmm. Because apparently it doesn't matter if you're alone or not. Even if you're with someone, you're going to get murdered.
You still could, totally.
Yeah.
That's true, so, I guess.
You might get shot right in the fucking neck.
What?
Dirt Dogs on a Gem Hunt. ¶¶